I mean, I don't know. I think it would be a little jarring if the very first thing people saw was it, but I should probably warn everybody.
Hey, Chris, buddy. Feline invasion coming your way. Hit the floor, man. Hit the floor.
It's too late.
It's already happened. There's a cat right here in the screen, so. Welcome to the Backpack Show, everybody, where we have wild animals.
They're supposed to be domesticated, but cats just don't care. Care at all.
They don't even fall into that category, do they?
No.
They don't.
They're like tiny lions. If that cat was bigger, you'd be lunch.
Tiny lions. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Welcome to the Backpack Show. We have a lot to do today. We've got an author guest. We have an amazing life story guest, like holy cannoli. And that was months in the making to get our new friend Dora Alexander on the show. So let's talk a little bit about it. Carrie, who's our guest today?
First, I'd like to say hello to Lieutenant Twitch.
Lieutenant Twitch.
For duty. Because all the teenagers in my house are asleep, so they won't be joining us via Twitch.
Twitch.tv/The Backpack Show. Go on and throw in an instance there. Twitch still doesn't think we're that interesting.
Well, we'll see about that.
But Chloe's over there. Thank you, Chloe.
So we have Nicole Glover. She's going to join us to talk about her debut novel, which is a historical fantasy novel called The Conductors. So I'm excited to hear from her about that. She's also a UX researcher. So we'll talk a little bit about, this is like one of those stories I love where it's like you really want to write a novel, but you have a full-time job as a UX researcher or something. I love those kind of stories. So we'll talk to Nicole. We also have Dora Alexander, who comes to us by way of Carol Alaloof, a member of the Backpack community, who just said, she's just awesome. You just have to talk to her. And we're like, huh?
Okay.
And then she started telling us a lot about Dora's life and her adventures. And we're like, you know what? We do need to talk to her. So we're going to do that. She's a homesteader, among other things. And she's in aviation.
A lot of onions to unpeel on the Backpack Show today. So get ready.
Your mom is here.
Hey, my mom is here. That is good to know. Remember, oh, Carol, so glad you brought her on.
This Hola, Dora's here.
Hey, Elizabeth. Hola for Dora now. Yeah. So one last thing before we get started. Remember, this is like Fight Club. If you don't say hi, we don't know you're here. So please say hi, just like my biological father, Steve Brogan, just did. Ready, go.
Hi, everyone. Tim Kitzer from NBA Jam and NFL Blitz. Welcoming you to The Backpack Show. Your hosts, Chris Brogan, Kerry Gargone, Boom Shakalaka.
Backpack Show.
So we're going to try something new today.
Holla. That's new.
Holla. So close, Bob Collins.
Maybe he did it on purpose. He is from Boston.
Backstage, right before we started the show, we were showing off our last Johnsonville Appreciation Day. We're sponsored by Johnsonville. You could get in on the last Appreciation Day, the very last one. We're done with it. They've given us as much sausage as they can. They have to actually save some for the rest of the world. Carrie@chrisbrogan.com. I almost said @johnsonville.com. What if they gave me an @johnsonville email address? Oh,
no,
I would cherish it.
That would be
it.
Entirely
I would
too dangerous.
Sausage King.
You'd be like stalker@johnsonville.com.
That would be nice, stalker@johnsonville.com.
Yeah, that's all you get.
So we'll read some of the other ads as we go throughout the day, but we've got a lot of stuff to cover. I think I want to talk about the book first. I want to talk about The Conductors. I think it's
let's do it.
I think it's super interesting. So we'll grab our pal, Nicole Glover, and get her on there. Carrie, you froze again. Good freeze, though.
Okay.
All right. Hi, Nicole.
Hello.
How the heck are you?
I'm good as anyone right now.
I know, right?
That's in the early middle part of the pandemic, I had a neighbor. I live in a factory building, and I had this neighbor run up and say, how are you? And I said, you know what? Like everyone, he goes, I'm going to stop asking that. He goes, I'm going to ask, what are you watching on Netflix right now? I said, that's a better question. So, you know, as Carrie was saying, you're a user experience researcher. You do all kinds of stuff to make the world better and fewer clicks and better flow. And then in the middle, you say, I've always wanted to write. I've written a lot of stuff before, but this is it. I'm really going to go for it. I'm going to finish this one. And you get The Conductors made. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's, I mean, when I was younger, I always wanted to be the writer. So actually being a UX researcher was the thing that came afterwards. Basically allows me to write more or less. And, you know, it's just more of a, it's kind of chaotic when I explain it to people, but for me, it's a more of a structure thing. Like I split my time, you know, I have my day job. I do that during the daytime. I might might daydream about like ideas for stories, write down notes periodically. But I usually save up my writing for the nighttime, for weekends. holidays and stuff like that. I'm lucky that I get a lot of time off from my job, particularly in last year. I gave it a bunch of extra time for different reasons. And I basically spent a lot of my holiday breaks, vacation time, just writing and stuff like that. It's just more of a, I guess, finding a schedule. Like I'm writing the first drafts. I give myself a word count I want to meet each night and for the weekends. And also plan around breaks too, because a lot of times it's easy to really get burned out because I am technically working two jobs at the same time. I'm lucky. I am really lucky. I don't have anyone else to take care of other than myself, which really does help as well. And I always want to point that out too, because I always feel like there's people who have with families and like all this other stuff. It does take a lot of time to write, and then you have all these different responsibilities that can interfere or just make things more difficult, more spinning plates, as like think of it as.
But why start with a novel and not a book about UX or something? Not that I'm suggesting you did anything wrong. I love this. Yeah. I just want to know your thought process.
It's fiction writing has always been my jam. There is an elegance to nonfiction writing of essays and of that sort of, because I've read a lot of creative nonfiction, I guess you like to call it. But fiction writing it's always been what I always did as younger, like writing a nonfiction book, even writing stuff about what I'm doing as a job, like more technical writing is not as appealing, you know?
Yeah.
So
really.
It's funny. I'm hiring a couple of technical writers to do the absolutely least pleasant part of technical writing, which is configuration guides and all that, mm-hmm. like really cold, raw software writing, like nothing. You don't say it. You don't brag about this to anybody. You just cash the check.
Make it sound like they're a dime a dance girls. Like, well, don't talk about it after.
Let me say this. I talked to 30 plus people who said they were tech writers who all immediately, when I told them what the writing was like, oh, not that. Like it was literally
that's too tech for tech writers.
29 some odd people were like, no, I just want to write about articles about how cool a see-through computer would be. Yeah. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, you can see the appeal though then of writing a historical fiction novel or something right. So completely outside your day-to-day experience.
Dig us into this world. I mean, we've got to know. Bob Collins pointed out the same way I do. I judge books by their cover. And I got to tell you, I'm not sure. If I saw that cover, I'd be like, where are we going with this, Nicole Glover? So tell me a little bit about it. Scoop us in.
Okay. It's primarily set in the post-Reconstruction era world. It's 1871 Philadelphia. And it's basically largely what we recognize as Philadelphia at the time, except there's magic. Everybody can do magic. There's the main characters can do what I call celestial magic, using constellations to as the way to kind of define and describe their magic. There's a lot of some of the politics, real world politics, ends up in the world of like that the idea that magic's segregated, that only white people can only use wands and sorceries, a typical like, kind of enchantments like that. And underneath, while that's all going on, there's a mystery going on. The main characters from the work as former underground railroad conductors, they decide after the Civil War, once they got settled in their new lives, Philadelphia, that their skills are best suited solving mysteries, solving murders and other magical oddities that happen around their community. So the main murder of the story, it follows an old friend of theirs that they find murdered. And it does a lot of big things in their story, and the rockstar world, because this is a good friend of theirs that dies, and it's the most personal death they had in a long time, and so it shakes up their lives, shakes up their friends' lives, shakes up things in the community, and a lot of the book follows some of the fallout from that, as well as just exploring the time period of the world itself.
I'm really excited about that notion that you know different skin color gets you a right to use different kinds of magic. Mm-hmm. By the way, I said, I'm not so sure about that cover. But, of course, my ex-wife says, that cover gets that book in my cart. Strong, powerful woman with a guiding light. I'll follow her. Nice moon phase wall art, by the way. So yes. She's all there for it. But I do love sort of period pieces that throw magic. So, like, I'm trying to think of the name. It's Jonathan Strange and Dr. Norrell or something like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, those kinds of books. Who are your influences fiction-wise? Not that you can ever bring that into the story. But who were you reading that made you jam out and say, this is the time, here's why I want to set it in this time and all that?
It wasn't any particular writings. I think it's this story kind of came out come across of different ideas I had at the time. Like, I was writing historical fiction, and I've always been into fantasy. I always liked mystery. So that kind of was the genesis of how I got the story idea. As for reading certain authors at the time, not really. I think I've always been widely read. So I read all the different kind of genres, different authors. So it wasn't, and it was a big bookworm. So I can't really point to a specific person that wasn't inspired me. But I guess other than just taking what things I liked reading, I wanted to write myself and see where it goes.
What kind of research did you do while you were writing the book? Like, you want to get things, if it's historical fiction, you need to get them as close to accurate as possible. So what'd you do?
Yes, I did a lot of research. I did a lot of general research to kind of narrow down what particular year I wanted to do, picking out what location, like things, topics I wanted to bring in, and also just getting a general sense of the world. I actually did as far back as like the early 1800s up to the present day of the novel, just to give a bigger scope. So I found just looking at one slice of a year in history doesn't give you a full breath of what's going on. Like, so many things in the past determine what's going on at the present moment. So I had to do a bunch of research about that, but not too deeply, just enough to get me an idea and a foundation to work with. And even a lot of that stuff never makes it to the page. It's just good for me to know the certain things. I did a lot of research with historical figures of that time period, the prominent people in the city and around cities. And a lot of the secondary characters got inspired by some of the research I did by particular people. I think I did a lot of research of more things that interest me, different topics, a lot of science and art stuff that I found interesting. I got lucky with finding some interesting primary documents. It's my favorite thing I always like to bring up is I found a pocket diary of Emily Davis, who was a free Black woman who lived in Philadelphia during the Civil War. She was a dressmaker. She had the diaries follow her day-to-day life. And even though she mentions a lot, like, you know, it's raining, I'm sick, I go visit X and Y and Z, she also makes notes of like big like Civil War moments, like from when the war ended or to when Lincoln was shown in Philadelphia's the hall where they was shown while he's lying in repose and things like that. It's like it's one of those rare like insights to like the interior lives of that time period, which is amazing. And another big research I used was W.E. Du Bois' Philadelphia Negro, which is a social study he did back in the late 1890s, which was a really good a slice of what Philadelphia was at the time. He really narrowed in on a lot of demographics and the social stuff. He even had maps of the city and neighborhoods and streets like that, which is really helpful because the modern day Philadelphia is very different from what it was back then. And so I can't really go visit Philadelphia now and kind of be able to translate that into the past. So those are some of the big stuff, and a lot of the trawling around JSTOR and all those academic journals for weird random topics. Mm-hmm. A very high use of the library, from pulling out all those books they had in storage to interlibrary loans to getting all these different topics because I was lucky to get enough narrowed enough to pick out certain things. And it's anything in the end of the day, it's a lot of research for a story with magic. So sometimes I have to pull back on how much focus I want to make on history, because I just had to have enough to make it historical, but also had to think about it doesn't have to be 100%. I can play around with it because there is magic, so I don't have to worry too much, but I wanted to get a good flavor of the historical aspect to it.
You want to be able to serve the story, of course, and you also want to be able to have the freedom to move people and places around where you want. I mean, if the playgrounds where you were spending most of your days were in West Philadelphia, in your story, you could put them in East Philadelphia.
Oh, for Pete's sake, stop it. Chloe wants to know, do you find that following creative pursuits helps you in your day job too?
Yeah, I think it always gives an outlet for certain things. You're limited to what you can do with your day job, and having something else to work on in the background at night or on the weekends, I guess you need something to work towards. I guess maybe sometimes it helps you get through the day.
Something to look
forward to. That sort of thing. Mm. And it's just something fun to have.
It's really interesting when you were talking about having to go back further than just the year in which the book is set because of just how much you're steeped in as a person living at that time. Now I'm thinking about the people who write historical fiction about right now, right? In the next few years, how much they're going to have to, they couldn't just come back in 2030 and just talk about 2030. We're going to be living completely differently based on what happened last year. So what were some of those things that you had to make sure were reflected in your book, even though they're not, they don't take center stage in the book?
Some stuff, it was like a lot of things around the Civil War, some of the things that happened in the gap between the end of the Civil War and between the war into when I started the book, and just some more like more backdrop stuff, getting a better sense of all those different rules, like the Fugitive Slave Act, Dred Scott case, all those different things like that, all the, even like the more intricacies of the Underground Railroad, which was kind of, it was always been informal, but it was more like 1850s and trying to figure out like what kind of spurred on certain things. And honestly, it's kind of keeping track of certain elements. And oddly enough, keeping track of like certain inventions that came out around the time period it came in. Like there's like, oddly enough, there's like a lot of the inventions that were just after I start the time period set in the book. I had to be careful because I always thought it was a little bit earlier and I had to figure out, or sometimes finding surprise, things are earlier than expected.
There's a lot of stuff that got invented right around the war. I mean, wars are great for invention, which is an awful sentence to say, but you know, totally true. One question, Elizabeth pointed out that she's got a sister who teaches high school history. And I was thinking about this the whole time, is that one cool way to get people interested in historical stuff is to put it through the lens of something more interesting, like magic or whatever, you know. It's you know, hiding the broccoli in the cake. And so you get a chance for them to have delicious, yummy cake, but there's broccoli in it. Does this help in those ways? And I guess in a way, is this another way to sort of decolonize somebody's bookshelf a little bit? Can you sneak it in a little?
Yeah, I think so too. I know as a kid, I read a bunch of historical fiction, and that inspired me to do more research to see how accurate it is, because I'm that type of person. Like I want to see how like true like, the story is. Yeah. And I can imagine, and I always come across readers on across the internet saying like, you know, because they read this historical fiction, even historical fantasy, they're like, or saw this historical thing mentioned in this book that inspired them to look it up, see, find more information about it, and learn something new. Because sometimes I might read something, oh, this can't be real. This seems too like unrealistic, even though it is 100% true. And so I imagine a lot of historical fiction, historical fantasy, anything that mentions something historical inspires people to do their research and find out more, or just be more curious about it.
One last question. We got to bring you back and our little panel after, and we'll bring Dora out. But tell us just a tiny bit about the magic system. Like, what are the rules?
Because
magic has to have rules.
Right.
Tell us about the magic rules.
Okay. For the main system for their celestial magic, it's everything's based off a constellation. You draw the constellation. It could be drawn in the air. It can be drawn like with sewing or using metal or drawn like a pen and paper. But the limits is that you have to draw it. Sometimes the light, there'll be, I think of it like a magical glow that happens when you set the spell. And even though you can kind of set any kind of spell with a different constellation, say you can use Ernest Minor or the Canis Minor and all the different ones you want for the same, like do like a lighting a candle. But the limitation is how quickly you can draw it, how present and aware that the light from that magic will happen, which is like one of the big drawbacks for that. But it
sounds like Dungeons and Dragons rules, like you got to set up your magic and stuff. It's not just like say something and it's done.
Yeah.
Which I prefer. I mean, I prefer that there's a weight to the magic, that there's a cost. There's not just that wiggling wands and learning how to, you know, say weird words like expectorate on somebody's patronum or something. Mm-hmm. I'm good about that. I'm into it. Nicole Glover, you gave us so much to deal with and think about. Thank you so much. The book, The Conductors, is officially out March 1st, I think it is.
March 2nd.
Okay. Beware the 2nd of March.
You can pre-order.
You can pre-order right now because, boy, Amazon loves to know if it's going to be a hit. So all our backpack friends, pick some up right now. See,
audio version, Conductors. Nicole? Will there be an audio version? Are you going to read it?
No. They got a very good narrator for this one.
I love me some audiobooks. So
it's James Earl Jones, everybody. Listen.
I could get my kid to sub in for James Earl Jones at this point. He is 15 and he sounds like he could sell you some insurance.
Oh my gosh, you're crazy. All right, Nicole, thank you so much. I'm putting you backstage. Boop.
Yeah, don't go away.
Don't go anywhere. We got Dora right around the corner. Dora Alexander. Let's see, what do we do? We did Johnsonville. Is that all we did?
I think so.
That's nothing.
You don't
authors, you want a cool author website? Nicole's an author. You can make one really quick. pub-site.com. It'll take you 2 hours. It'll be up and running. What a great website it is. It's super fast and easy. It's $20 a month. It covers everything. It's everything an author needs because the people who made it are FSB associates. 25 years in the business being book publicists for the biggest names in the world. Oh, you're not good enough for, you think you're too good for PubSite? Tom Clancy's on PubSite. Robin Cook's on PubSite. It's a fancy pants place. Pub-site.com. I want to make a show just like this one. Seabrogan.me/StreamYard. You'd be amazing at making a show.
Bring your make own debut novelist.
I love it. Seabrogan.me/StreamYard. Let's grab Dora.
Garen Homesteader.
Here's the. I have two more reads to do, so you're gonna wreck me if we don't do this right.
I'm gonna wreck you.
Wreck me. I'm grabbing Dora.
Bah, move, hi, get Dora. Hello.
How the heck are you?
Hello.
When our friend Carol Alaloof said you have to talk to my friend Dora, she said she's had such a life. She's a storied person. She's done so much. How does all of the, I mean, so we said, you know, what do you want us to call you? And you're like, I don't know, aviation finance and homesteader.
you could be a heroine in the next book Nicole Glover writes.
How does this come out in passing? Like, how do you, you're at the local feed and grain store in the Great White North in Canada. You've tread in there on your snowshoes. You've got all your beaver pelts. How do you say to someone, boy, you should hear about my crazy upbringing?
I'm sure it comes out in little bits, right?
Where does that come out?
I do it just like that. Tap, tap, tap. Let me tell you about my crazy upbringing.
Right. Rah!
Well, that's how Chris does it, let's be fair. But he had a far less crazy upbringing.
Yeah.
So let's talk about it. Where does your story begin, Dora?
Okay. I grew up in Pennsylvania. Number 6 child of 8 in an old order religious community. Called the Bruderhof, a little bit like the Amish, but not quite, where there's no individual money and everyone lives together in a kind of a village setting. So it was a little bit like growing up in the 1800s. Women wore black headscarves, ankle-length skirts. At that time, the men wore black pants and suspenders and beards. And that's where it all started.
So Chris is like one pair of suspenders away from fitting right in there, I think.
You know, yeah, you'd have to cut the hair a little shorter on the top, but the beard would really,
I had a big old Santa beard until, you know, a tiny minute ago.
It's true.
I'm fluffing through all of your, what photos I have available to me, which is a few, but I was just going to show this one, which kind of brings us back to that time.
Yeah.
It was not simple living. I mean, what you had going on, what was the environment? What were you in?
Yeah, well, this is a great picture. This is actually my grandmother who lived to be 108 years old. And you can see her on the end of the wagon. She's actually holding my mother in her arms there. So that was a time when the entire religious group was in Paraguay, where they were fleeing from Nazi Germany, which is where the group started.
Wow.
So, yeah, you know, the day-to-day life was very... very peaceful, very predictable. They had the financial background of the group is a wood furniture and toy factory that actually we started working in quite young as kids. Actually, we would go in there and hand sand boards and so on. And there was a strong agricultural component with, you know, growing our own food and animals and so on. So, I guess the day-to-day life looked a lot like you imagine sort of a Amish old order Mennonite type setting to be.
So at what point do you leave there? Because from what I understand, it was pretty early on.
I was around 17, and my sister and I had been selected to go to college to become teachers for the local community school. So it was very exciting. My parents brought us to a little private college in Kentucky, of all places. And, we arrived in our headscarves and our long dresses, and we were enrolled in school. I didn't know anything about, you know, the outside world or money or really how mailboxes worked or anything. And they dropped us off and left with strict instructions to kind of follow the same sorts of rules and boundaries, which of course I immediately did not do.
I was going to say, you're like, totally.
Yeah.
Bye.
Yeah. So it was a pretty steep learning curve, but it was really, you know, fun and interesting. It was a culture shock. So it was an interesting feeling of obviously I'm you know, I'm American, I looked American, but, you know, had no understanding of the culture, the environment around me. So people would say, you know, are you babushkas? Are you from Russia? You know, I'm like, no, I'm from Pennsylvania. So, yeah, but it wasn't too long after that that I started sort of shedding the vestiges of the background and adapting more, you know, listening to Boys to Men. And because we didn't have any music, we weren't allowed to listen to anything with a rhythm. It was considered to be sort of at that time, you know, the devil's heartbeat or something. So I was like, wow, this is great.
Chloe's asking about the adjustment. Like, was it difficult or was it liberating or was it a bit of both?
Yeah, I think I would say a bit of both for sure. Mostly, I mean, 17, really exciting. You know, microwave popcorn, Ricky Lake show, TV. I'd never seen, you know, it was, you know, so a lot of like, wow, this is really terrific and cool. A lot of sort of shocks and you know, misunderstandings and like, how does this work moments too.
But when you're writing home, were they like, whoa, I think we might need to take you back home this year going off?
Well, that's literally exactly what happened. My sister was a little more conservative and kind of toed the line. She's a couple years older than I was, and we shared a dorm room. And, you know, she was a little more kind of by the book. On Sundays, she would listen to cassettes of the church services from back home that our parents would send us. I was like, you know, screw that.
You're like, I'm good.
Yeah, yeah. And then in the end, you know, she actually let my dad know. She said, I think Dora's kind of going the way of the world.
Your sister narked on you?
Yeah, a little bit.
Oh, come on.
That's okay. We came to terms on it later. But then, so they said, okay, you know what? You're coming home. They kind of called us within a couple of days and said, come on back. We're sending someone, you know, tomorrow to pick you up. And you're coming back.
So right about here is where the story gets a whole lot crazier. It gets a lot more intense. There's a lot of stuff to deal with after that. So you start with Boys to Men. You start with Gee Whiz television, which I can't even fathom, you know, not having seen it. And then suddenly that in your face, it gets worse, you know, before you get to be who you are. How do we want to talk about that? How do we want to address that?
Oh, I don't know. It was just always an evolving kind of a learning curve, right? So like I remember being told, and I was always a little embarrassed that I didn't, there were so many things I didn't know. For example, I knew I had to get a driver's license. And the internet wasn't quite what it is today, right? So I remember I had a job in a little store and someone tried to write me a check. And they said, would you like a driver's license? I was like, oh, yes. Yes, I would. Like she thought, I thought it was something she was giving me. Here's a license and now you'll have one.
Here's your gift.
So, oh, no.
Yeah. And then she gave it to me hers. I was like, oh, okay. You know, got it. This is yours. But yeah, I mean, I kind of just found my way, you know, worked a bunch of jobs. So that then when my sister ended up leaving, I said, I'm going to stay. You know, then that was a difficult time. There was a separation then from the family. They were obviously unhappy that I'd chosen not to return.
So how do you mean that? They stopped talking. They said, we don't want to be your pal. We, you know, forget it. You're no daughter of ours, kind of a separation, or just, you know, you're not talking right now. What's...
Yeah, it was pretty much like, if that's your choice, then you're going that direction. And then that's kind of it for us.
Wow.
So
a lifestyle, a family tree and everything suddenly gets shut right at one time.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, after that, since then, we've sort of rebuilt the relationship and so on. But it's a difficult thing when someone breaks away from their culture, their religious background. It was certainly challenging at the time.
So what do you do next? Like, you know, suddenly you're not getting, like, they're not paying your rent. They're not going to handle things like that. You've got to drive yourself through this. You came out the other side. Look at you now. Look how strong you are.
Now you're an aviation finance homesteader.
Right. You know how to take care of yourself and then some. But there's like a raw spot where you have to figure out a lot of stuff fast. What did you prioritize? What did you decide was, this is how I'm going to make my way through it? And what did you cling to in silent moments?
I think I really sort of, I had no long-term vision right? Because there was no real adult saying, look, this is what a career looks like. This is what you should focus on. It was kind of a week by week basis. So I played soccer. I joined all the clubs. I really enjoyed the short term excitement of campus life. I had no notion of what it meant when I said, okay, I'm fine. I'm staying here. I'm doing this. I'm going to live in the outside world. So like my major, I almost at one point became like an African, you know, anthropology independent major, because I thought that was super interesting without any notion to what jobs or, you know, but it was really just one foot in front of the other. And my upbringing had given me gave me and continues to give me a lot of sort of inner fortitude and independence and self-reliance and work ethic. So that kind of, you know, carried me through, and it was just all really a big adventure.
What was and are or is your relationship with religion now? What's upstairs?
Yeah. You know, that's a really good question. And for many, many years, I was completely, you know, a-religious and sort of anti-religious. In the last, I would say, decade or so, I started really missing, you know, the community elements that come with religious affiliations and the cultural elements that were really precious and amazing in my upbringing. The contact with seniors, with kids, the social justice issues and so on. So everyone thinks this hilarious, but I'm actually now an active part of a Mennonite, of a liberal Mennonite community up here in Ontario, Canada. So it's kind of come full circle. I wouldn't say I'm a very religious person in terms of hell, heaven, and all the kind of, you know, that's really unimportant to me. But those cultural elements of my religious background, I've been able to rekindle a little bit in my current living.
How did it equip you for homesteading?
Well, you know, we grew up doing all these really fun things. We would do maple sapping and raise bottle rams and plant gardens and, you know, flowers and build things from wood. And that was, you know, a lot of my favorite memories, making our own go-karts and, you know, with no TV, no screens, no music. It was just, we were always making stuff and always out on the land. And, you know, I have kids now and I wanted to give them the good elements of that background as much as I could. So, you know, bought 10 acres just north of Toronto. And, you know, we're giving them, my partner and I are giving our kids as much of the cool elements as we can of what I grew up with.
Aviation. How's that fit in? When did you even see an airplane?
Yeah, I first saw an airplane in my teens, because, you know, the community groups have different centers in different places of the world. So we did use commercial flights from time to time. But, you know, I had actually a background in media and advertising and worked with my dear friend Carol Alalouf in a media company in the past, is where we met. But then when I bought the homestead and started building it up, really wanted something that I could do from home. And I'm an entrepreneurial person and just said, I will do anything that will allow me to be independent, build my own schedule. And so found a startup opportunity and really just kind of bushwhacked my way into it with a very small company, working for, you know, for no compensation for the first year or so, and then kind of moving up and getting a working with a more established organization now.
Your changes and choices along the way keep seeming to build on themselves. You keep taking from your past and building it into what you want to restructure things as. Has that been the kind of guiding light of what you do? Is it, you know, I'll take the parts that work, I'll reject the parts that don't? Like, what's the sort of Dora credo that comes with all the changes and things you've made happen?
I think so. You know, my philosophy has always been like, your life is what you do on a Tuesday afternoon. You know, like the concept of our goals and what our aspirations and dreams are. It's like, what does that actually look like? So for me, that's informed. What I want to be doing on Tuesday afternoon is maybe building a tool shed with my kids, or ziplining across my pond, or you know, sitting in my own office and drinking coffee and some whiskey in there. You know, whatever that looks like. So rather than sort of a hypothetical goal of building something specific. It's been about creating experiences, making connections, and that's kind of been what's carried me through.
You brought that through to the little people in your life. There's a mouse hotel going on at your place right now, for instance.
There is. These are the COVID anxious rats that my sons received for Christmas, and they go through little sagas of claustrophobia and so on in the house. So there's some little narrative to accompany that. Yeah.
That one's using the treadmill more than I have in the last few years.
Same. Yeah.
That's my room right there. Watching.
They
all
have
the
a
videos.
Fireman pole.
A little pool room. So.
Oh, that's cool. That's really cool.
It's a really fun photo.
The Barbie
shoot.
Dream house got nothing on this.
Nope.
Barbie's house is boring. Didn't even have a garage big enough for the Corvette. Her house made no sense to me.
So Mish pointed out something that we all thought when you said it, because you just whipped right by it. But you have a zip line over your pond. Like, we need in on that action.
We have about 150-foot zip line that starts from the balcony of a tree house and goes right across. So in the summer, you can shoot out and drop into the water. And in the winter, as the kids are doing that, you can shoot out and then drop onto the pond where you can, you know, skate and hang out. So,
Chloe, how far does that drop?
I'm going to say far enough.
My five-year-old can manage it.
Oh, okay.
Chloe wants to know if you ever go back and visit the community where you grew up.
You know, I do. That's a really good question. And there were many, many years after sort of the separation that were really painful and you know, of a pretty much no contact, unfortunately, on their side. But recently the group as a whole, as an organization, is really working hard to open up communication with people like myself that left. After I left, three other brothers also left of my eight siblings. So in the last, I would say, 5 or 6 years, the contact has really increased significantly. And I go back, you know, probably a couple times a year. And you know, when I go back, I put the clothes on again and, you know, just immerse myself back in that time, in that place. And I love it. You know, I have a lot of positive associations, and I've chosen to focus on the positive of that experience and of the relationship that I can have now.
Well, I think it's a beautiful thing. Carrie had to go. She had something she was organizing that she could not over miss, which is all about vaccines. So in this time of death, she needed to get that handled. I'm going to grab Nicole back. It's time for us to have a little wee chitty chat together. Hello, Nicole. You never know. You might want to do your next book on escaping into their worlds from somewhat restrictive religions and then being able to find a new version. I was excited when you talked about the fact that you went into a Mennonite, a more liberal version, because there's also kind of an old order Mennonite as well, right? So there's ones that mirror the still no tech, still no everything, but obviously you're on a computer, so a little more tech. Nicole, did it, you know, could be a sequel.
Who knows?
Never know. When you finish a book like the one you did with Conductors, do you end up saying to yourself, all right, I'm already ready for the next one? Like, or do you just say, that was it? Is there a trilogy already planned? Like, does this end then that way?
Well, there's actually a follow-up, second book in the works. It's actually, I just turned it in. It's scheduled for November of this year to come out.
March and November in the same year, you're rocking.
Yeah, it's one of those accidents, because the first book should have come out last year, but it got pushed back for various reasons. So it does shrink the time between two books. And a lot of people like that, because, you know, less time to wait, less time to forget certain details. Writing it for me was a way to kind of take it. It was a good way to organize how I revised the first book, because some things I cut out from the first book ended up in the second book. So it made it easier to make the second book, because the first book, The Conductors, was meant to be standalone. And when I pitched it to my agent, to my editors, it was this one book. That's pretty much it. And I had I had ideas for further stuff, but no direct plans for a direct sequel. But then my editor was like, let's have two books, one being direct sequel. So I was like, okay, where do I go from there? And so I looked at all the stuff I ended up cutting, and it was very easy to turn it to another story. So exciting. Plus, I did a lot of research, so all that stuff ends on the cutting floor, and it's easier to integrate into the book. So
Dora, one of the things that happens here a lot of times, oh, this is just not going to work, thank you, One of the things that happens here a lot of the times is we book guests just, we don't, there's never supposed to be any kind of connection between the guests, but we always seek out alchemy. One thing I see is that, you know, Nicole had her user experience job, which is nothing like the kind of creativity required. I mean, there's a lot of creativity in user experience, but it goes in a different place. And now we have Dora, who, you know, you've had to change your entire system a couple of times now in a row, and you've picked your path. What do you think when you think of these opportunities to be creative? I mean, who knows? Maybe your book's ready to go.
I think creativity is fantastic. And there's just, you know, making things, you know, with, you know, from the creative place in our brain, I think is just the most amazing human experience possible. So I'm very impressed with Nicole's work. I look forward to getting the book, and I think it's fantastic.
Did you catch up and watch things like Grease and Star Wars and stuff like that? Like, was there a list of movies you had to watch or something to come?
You know, I'm so embarrassed. I feel like I can never really catch up. And I for many years, I had sort of a complex. So now I just tell people, look, I grew up basically Amish. I don't know any of the stuff. I didn't watch Star Wars. I just kind of put it out there. And I some of them, yes, lots of them, no. But that's okay.
You definitely miss things and don't realize you're missing them. Like, we've watched Looney Tunes with my kids, and those are old, right? And so I know I'm missing a whole bunch of references. Like, I'll know they're commenting on something or making a joke or referencing something, and I don't get it. My kids are missing a whole nother slew of things, you know? So I think that's just going to be one of those things where some stuff you just won't get. And that would be tough even to research, right, Nicole? Like, you're trying to keep yourself in the period. You'd have to read a lot of journals to get to that point where you've got that level of, like, pop culture knowledge.
Breaking news, by the way. Lori just spilled the beans. Dora's book is half written. Watch for it. It'll be a fantastic read. I love supportive partners. Go, Lori, go. Hey, speaking of supportive partners, Castos makes our podcast happen.
Yay!
I almost forgot. We have a podcast. Anywhere you can find a podcast, just put in the Backpack Show, and it's like this show, only without beautiful people. It's just
They're there. You just only hear them.
You know, voices everywhere. And look, this show, our website, which is thebackpackshow.online, is sponsored by get.online. If you want your own .online website, could be dora.online, which would be extra funny for, you know, the former Mennonite type world. And I know your other group.
Somebody
is not
took
that.
Kerry .online. I was like, what the hell, .online?
cbrogan.me/online, you get 90% off. It comes down to like 99 cents for a domain. It is ridiculous. Dave Davy says, great segue.
Look at all these comments happening. They're all like,
Lori is Dora's beautiful, charming wife. No,
yeah,
anyway,
they're like,
I'll slide it right in.
Have good chit chat.
So, very good stuff. So, we are at that part of the show where we're getting ready to ask the backpack question, but I need to also do one other thing. I almost forgot.
Oh, and here's our person of the day. Kaboom!
Which I had somebody totally different plan, but it's got to be Lori. I mean, come on, she brought that news. I mean, that wasn't on my horizon. I did not know there was a Dora Alexander book coming. I didn't, you know, watch me zip. That would be a watch me nay nay. I love Carol's point that, you know, there were a lot of pop culture references that flew over your head early on. It's really, that's
there's some that fly over Carol's head, though. She's got nothing like your excuse.
She's just Canadian.
To be fair.
It's funny to think about because with culture references, like you were saying, Carrie, going back and researching culture references right after the Civil War is like, it's got to be insane. It's got to be, you know, Civil War where doctors were basically saw people, you know, oh, there's that leg, see ya. Everything started with a saw where germs weren't a thing yet.
So you probably just get a sense that there's something you're missing, like that they're saying something that makes you go, wait, what? And then you have to go back and try to figure out the context or something. That must be...
Now, fascinated to hear the answer to this question. Last question we ask every guest, what goes in your backpack? Now it can be something physical, like an avocado, or it can be something from a part of your world that's metaphorical. Like, Carrie, what's a good metaphorical one?
Oh boy. Well, I would say kindness, but I think I'm going to move on to fearlessness and vulnerability, which are some of my original favorites.
Those are good
ones.
From
comedian Dave Landau.
So I'll start with Nicole Glover. Nicole, what goes in that backpack?
A really obvious one for me would be like a pencil and a notebook, but not just an ordinary one, a magical one that can do, you can put down your feelings, your thoughts, all this other fun stuff, and make your imagination turn into reality.
Magic pencil.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. A magic pencil that writes what you're thinking. I would be like, no pencil. Stop it.
Other people would pay per minute for that pencil. Carrie's pencil, not their own.
Oh God.
I love it. Dora Alexander, what goes in your backpack?
I've given this a lot of thought. And in my backpack, I'm going to have to say Apfelschnitzel.
Wow.
I brought a little sample here.
Oh.
Yeah, this is a dried piece of apple, Apfelschnitzel, because it can be used for anything. A little snack. Your goat gets out and won't come back. You can coax it back with the Apfelschnitzel. Also good for tea, which people don't often know. Multiple purposes.
It's good for teeth?
It
like
is.
For flossing with it? Or
no, for tea. You can make tea.
Oh, tea. With tea. It. I thought you said teeth. Magical pencil. Teeth. Yes, please. Yeah, when you said teeth, I was thinking how DJ Cumberbund, a former guest, said he would keep an extra set of teeth in his backpack.
We don't know why. So Deanna likes that one
butcher,
better than the tweezers. So
the tweezers. Why would you ever take tweezers? If you're alone backpacking through the wilderness, why do you need tweezers?
Who cares about your chin?
Who are you going to run into that's going to be like, damn, your eyebrows are a wreck? I'm not worried about it.
You can write a spell on your dried apple with your magic pencil, says
Dave,
Kat.
You just need, you need that little piece of apple.
If you had an apple, Dave, you'd have a goat.
All right. I'm getting so many comments about magic and apples together.
Who knew?
And goats. That's a new one. I don't think we've ever discussed goats, have we?
Pen, pineapple, apple, pen. See, it's a spell waiting to happen.
Yeah.
Another culture reference, Dora. I'll get you there. One of those things that was true about my grandmother, too. She was French-Canadian, raised in New Brunswick, which is pretty much like being raised in the wilderness. Pig farmers all around everywhere. Is that she, too, had a challenge or two in kind of figuring out what the big city wanted of her. And boy, one time she went to a movie, and she wasn't sure what the movie was about, but I'll tell you by the title that it was a little something she didn't really expect. So the movie she went to was...